Hey there, everybody. It is October the 12th, 2011, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm Ken. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us an email at thisshowissogay@aol.com, strolling on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn about all the fun things with our dog and pony little gay show. And of course, going to the Facebook, typing in This Show Is So Gay, liking us, because we sure as heck like you. I am joined this week by two of my favorite straight people in the whole wide world. The lovely Jen. How are you, Jen?
I'm great.
Steven?
I'm great. Thank you for asking.
Who calls you Steven?
My mom.
Yeah. And?
My mom.
And me.
And me. Yeah.
We haven't done this, the three of us, we haven't done this in so long. And by this, I mean the radio show. We have not done this in so long.
It's true. It's been years, really.
It hasn't, but that was cute. So this is our first new show of October, and it is LGBT History Month. Happy LGBT History Month.
Yay.
Thank you. It's been a good one so far.
How are you celebrating?
Just every day, a new letter of the alphabet. We've already got through L, the B, the G, and who knows what could come after that.
You can do 3 days on Q alone. That's really the fun part. So there was a great article today. There actually were a ton of great articles today, because it was 13 years ago today that 21-year-old Matthew Shepard died. It wasn't when he was attacked, but it was he died 13 years ago today after a brutal attack in Laramie. And that was a big defining, I don't know if I talked about it with you guys, that was a hugely defining moment for me, because he was same age as me. Just a really big defining moment. And someone wrote, there were comments about it, and someone wrote, if one forgets, they have no feeling at all, which I don't know that anyone would forget it, except that I think that today's youth don't necessarily even know about Matthew Shepard.
That's probably true. And that's strange to think. And again, being older than you, I forget how utterly impactful that must have been. Really deeply formative time for you.
Because and we all have that. We all have, like, when that person dies that impacts you, person dies. And it's very tied into our childhood. For you, your childhood, it was Jen, it was Michael Jackson, I would assume. And Steve.
What?
Churchill. I don't know, but I assume that was fun. We had fun there. But yeah, it scares me that people might not know about Matthew Shepard, and do we need another horrible murder? Or I guess the names that people know now are all the kids who have died, who have killed themselves from the bullying.
Yeah, that is a new phase. And I have to say, yeah. I mean, I have empathy for people who do forget horrible things that have happened, partly because I think it's in some ways adaptive on the part of the human brain.
Right.
The other part is we're inundated by people. And granted, I think the world is largely full of good people, but we see story after story on a daily, if not minute by minute basis, of somebody doing another horrible thing to gay, straight, or all the in-betweens, you know?
It's just sometimes we don't see it so much here in the Brattleboro, though.
No.
Not so much of that. But yeah, sometimes we have to remind ourselves, oh yeah, that is going on all over the place.
Right. Our force field is holding up and none of that's coming in here.
Although I will tell you, I don't know if you saw, Steve is the host of Live and Local, 9 to 12 in the morning on KVT, 1490 AM, which, by the way, I now leave on 1490 for the rest of the day.
Wow.
I hear some very, there are some liberal people there on the 1490.
Tom Hartman, Tom Hartman is brilliant in many ways.
I hear the woman.
Stephanie. Stephanie Miller. She's a little more flippant.
Yes, a little bit. Anyway, but we are doing Marlboro Colleges, where I don't know if you know this, I work at the Marlboro College.
Yes, we know that.
And we are sponsoring, that's what they tell me, not for the next month, but we're sponsoring an LGBT youth drop-in night. We're going to start doing this on gallery walk nights in the Grad Center for LGBT youth who want to gather.
And not just from the college or from the...
No.
Oh,
in fact,
nice
not from really the college at all. It's... anyone from 14 to 20 years old. But I put it up there on one of the local sites that I love. Does the eye rolling not translate here on the radio? And someone wrote to me and said, that's just not something that we need here at all.
Oh, my.
And there's no reason that LGBT youth need to be meeting separate from straight youth. And I didn't write back because I kind of wasn't in the mood. I will later
sort
tonight.
Yeah, that's baiting, I would think.
But that is important. That is it. I don't know, in the same way that I really like being around other gay people. I like you guys too, but I do like being around other gay people every now and then.
I can't think of why somebody would be resistant to that happening and take the time to write to a relative stranger and say,
Well, that's part of the medium, but that's a whole different show. That's what we talk about on Live and Local, not this show.
Indeed.
It's so gay.
Well, I think everybody's different and they see things differently.
They do.
And it doesn't necessarily mean a slam.
Right. Right. And I think that they were trying to say, and I will give you that.
I think it's kind of an all-inclusive thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think that's what this person was trying to say is we're in the same way that we're post-race. I don't know if you know that. We are indeed post-race.
Oh, turns out that whole racism thing is over. Yay.
Colorblind. But
there was much celebrating.
Yes, there was. It was yesterday in Boston and the police joined in. But we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show because you know that whole story has a whole gay tint to it.
It does.
We'll talk about it later. But I agree with you, Jen. I think that what the person was saying is we're post that. There's no reason for gay youth to be congregating separately because here in the Brattleboro, everything's fine. Everything's fine. The parents, you know, if you want to live here, parents have to sign that contract that says if my son or daughter comes out, I'm totally good with it.
Yeah.
Totally okay.
Yeah,
it's
a rule.
They still have
people have been moved
here.
Out of here, physically removed from the town.
Yeah. But no P flag. Do you know, I was very tempted to start a P flag here. I got some email that said there's no parents and friends of lesbians and gays.
Where's the nearest?
In Rutland. By the way, no matter what question you could have asked me right now, I would have said in Rutland. I had decided that was my answer. You could have said, where is the nearest Ethiopian place? And I would have said in Rutland. There was nothing. Any topic. Give me anything. Where do they make the flags for Yemen? In Rutland.
Yeah.
So, no, I don't know where the nearest one is, but I feel it's in Rutland. It's nowhere near here. Nowhere near here. And so I'm kind of curious to see how that would go over, except that I also kind of feel like I have enough things right now and I don't need to add another thing.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
So if you could start a P flag, Jen, that would be great.
Yeah.
And let me know how
it turns out.
So, and let me cover out one other quick story, and then we're going to welcome a guest, one of my favorite guests that we've had so many times on this show. You know, Sally Kern. Do you know Oklahoma State Representative Sally Kern? Is she someone who has come up on your show?
No.
She has now called gays more dangerous than terrorists. Apparently, she means that now literally. She recently said, she said this on Monday, she appeared on the conservative religious radio show Wall Builders Live, which, by the way, funny is that as a title?
Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding?
It's not even a euphemism. It's just what they do. It's Wall Builders Live.
I just like to obstruct people from going from one place to another.
And we do it live. So it's not just, it's not pre-recorded. They build those walls right there in the moment. She told the hosts, David Barton and Rick Green, that fear has gripped her whole body when she realized that she was receiving angry emails from gay people after a video of her remarks about gays and terrorists were posted online in March of 2008. One of the guys from Wall Builders Live commented that her reaction was likely physical fear rather than merely political fear, and she responded that she and her husband, quote, asked ourselves the question, are we willing to even lose our lives over this? Kern is currently promoting her book, The Stoning of Sally Kern, that is the name of the book, which has been endorsed by, wait for it, Anita Bryant. I can only hope that's on the dust jacket. Anita Bryant says, I heard this on Wall Builders Live, and it was the best book. It's the book of the year. So, gays, you need to lay off of Sally Kern because she fears for her life, and she does it live on Wall Builders. All right, we're going to play a quick song, and then we're going to welcome a guest. You guys ready for that?
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's do it. right, and we are back. Hey, Steve and Jen, you ready to welcome a guest?
Sure are.
Yes. Hey, guest, are you ready to be welcomed?
I'm so ready.
This is so good. All right, let me. I'm doing a brief introduction because we're pressed for time, and you know you've been on the show 12 times before, so people know you. Kathy Renna is the managing partner of Renna Communications. She is nationally recognized as a media relations expert and a leader within the LGBT community. She's what I call one of the prime go-to gays, and in my head, she uses that. In other places. She served as the primary spokesperson for GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, as well as their first national news media director. And her Facebook wall is betterthanadvocate.com. Kathy Renna, welcome back to the show, Is So Gay.
Thank you for having me back. I love that last part.
And it is, and let me, before, because there's so much I want to talk to you about, but because you just said that, I did not realize, Kathy, until this week, because we didn't have a show last week, and so maybe I haven't been totally update, that 365gay.com, which is sometimes where I get some news, is no longer a website.
Very sad. I had good friends, Jennifer Vanesco, you know, other writers. We posted a lot of things. In fact, I posted a piece a few years ago about the 10th anniversary of Matthew Shepard's death on there that I was looking for because I wanted to send it around and repost it since today. Sadly, is the 13th year mark since his death, and I couldn't access it because 365day.com is gone. It's really just, you know, it's a shame. The, you know, LGBT media is struggling, and that was a prime example of a really, really big loss, I think.
But if I were to be Pollyanna, Kathy, which, to be clear, I'm not, I would say that I can't go to CNN.com without seeing an LGBT story.
No, I agree. It's a balance because I think that the challenge is that when you have, you know, community or niche media, whether it's the LGBT community, African-American or women's, there's going to be more nuance. There's going to be a more sophisticated perspective oftentimes. There's going to be, frankly, a higher level of interest and detail. So, yes, it's great that there's tons of more mainstream media coverage, but as someone who works with mainstream and community media,
right,
there are differences. And so I find it sad when that pool gets smaller, and I know for a fact that other large LGBT outlets, you know, struggle. They struggle. They have competition. I don't know if you saw that the Huffington Post now has a what they're calling the Gay Voices section, which is making a lot of LGBT media nervous because the Huffington Post, a lot of traffic, a lot of ads, a lot of competition.
Thank God I have your Facebook wall. That's my place. That's where I go.
There you go.
That's where I go. Well, we do have tons to talk about, and we will. We were just talking a little bit earlier on the air about Matthew Shepard, but we also lost a couple of pioneers this week, did we not?
We did. Very sad. Two people I counted as friends and mentors and really heroes. Paula Edelbrick, who I've known for decades, who originally was at Lambda Legal, fought so many cases, including a number of family. LGBT family-focused court cases that were just integral in the history of sort of advancing rights for those of us who are parents, and was then at International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, and her last position, she was at the Stonewall Community Foundation. She died of cancer. She was very young. She was a few years older than me. She was I think, in her early 50s, and just a really tragic loss. And then yesterday, we lost I would jokingly call him the godfather, but he, you know, he would always say, no, I'm not Italian. Frank Kameny, who he was really, I guess, the grandfather of the modern gay rights movement, who has been in 5 decades. He was 86 years old, and he's been fighting for gay rights and coined the phrase gay is good in the 50s with the Mattachine Society. Yeah. And is just, you know, there are very few people who have been involved as long and in as big a way as he has. And I was just so happy to see that he was able to live to, you know, see the day where he'd actually be standing in the Oval Office and be handed a pen by the president as he signed legislation that, you know, was increasing protections for LGBT people and that the government would apologize to him for firing him for being gay, which happened in the 50s.
Yes. Yeah. I remember reading about that in Courting Justice, which is actually one of my favorite texts to kind of pour through. Now, and I know you've interacted with Frank before and you two have obviously met. What advice do you think Frank would give to us these days? Because it's hard for me to look around and see another Frank that's happening right now.
Well, see, I don't think that's true, because I think that the spirit that Frank had, there were two things about Frank that, and they were so extraordinary because they were so much harder to find in the past. And now you do see basically a self-awareness and a confidence in who he was. I mean, the two things that defined him, if you had to find two phrases, one was his phrase that he coined, gay is good.
Yeah.
The absolute, completely confident notion that who he was a good thing. And for so many of us, we all carry around baggage that, we say we're proud and we go to gay pride, but, deep down, is it a good thing? Right? So the fact that he just with complete 150% confidence said, no, look in the mirror and say it. Gay is good. And then the other thing he would always say is, we're right and they're wrong, which I just, there's no way to stop a debate dead than having Frank Kameny look at, some rabid homophobe or, right-wing nut in the eye and say, you know what? Bottom line is we're right, you're wrong. Like, what do you say to that?
Right. There's not much.
There's not much. And he was right. I mean, his utter conviction that he refused to even acknowledge the lies and the misinformation and the stereotyping that was thrown at him from, literally from the 50s. He was part of the decision to get homosexuality out of the DSM in 1973.
Yeah.
And basically, as he always joked, with the swipe of a pen, make us all sane. It's like
right,
those kinds of things to him were just, he knew how important they were, but they were just innately so ridiculous. And that's what I loved about him, his complete confidence and his just completely uncensored willingness to say it like it was. And you know what? You don't agree with me, fine, don't agree with me, but I'm right and you're wrong.
Well, I have to tell you, Kathy, and that's what I still am kind of thinking we don't really have, is because we are so media savvy now, and there's not a lot of that kind of uncensored element, because we want to couch the LGBT issues in a way that we can really create some change. And I loved reading his quotes, and that's what I feel like I'm not seeing as much these days, because we really
I would absolutely agree. I have a piece that's going to be in the Huffington Post Gay Voices section, actually, in the next day or so, that actually addresses some of those issues. I think we're too nice. I think we're too gentle. I think we don't give people who could be our allies or already are our allies enough credit when we talk about things. Mm-hmm. We dumb things down. We desexualize when we talk about stuff. And, we try and make things safe. And I think a lot of that is, this idea that that's the strategy that works, because, focus groups tell us that. And I don't dislike focus groups, but I also don't think we're selling toothpaste here. I mean, this is about people's lives. And, and the other piece of it is that I think too many of us in the movement, in the community, still need to deal with our own issues.
Right.
Our own issues of, internalized homophobia, sexism, racism, classism. They're big things, and if we continue to not deal with them, we're just not going to see the progress we want to see.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Well, moving on. Tell everyone where you are going tomorrow.
Well, I'm off to Vegas, baby. which I'm so not a Vegas person. I barely gamble. I make bets with my daughter, and she's six. But I am so excited. For about a little over a year now, we've been working with a group called OutServe, which nobody doesn't know about because they're all over the media.
Right.
They are essentially the largest LGBT employee resource group in the world now. They're a group of active duty, lesbian, gay, bisexual, active duty service members who were integral to the whole fight to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. When the media found out that we had an organization where there were folks who were willing to, under anonymity or, go on Rachel Maddow with out any lighting or, tell their stories and say, look, this is not an issue of letting gay people in the media, letting gay people in the military. We're in the military.
Right.
We're here. We're serving. We're dying in Afghanistan. And when I die, my partner's not the person who's notified.
Right.
Because I am not recognized and I can't be out. It was an extraordinary component to the whole argument that really helped push things along. And so now this group is essentially becoming a huge resource to the military to do education internally. And they're having this summit. We have, I think, about 250 active duty service members, cadets, students, and other folks who work, you know, within the military industrial complex, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm not a military person, so this is all, a lot of it's new to me, but it's going to be really interesting. They're going to get together and really say, okay, we've done this, but what's next? You know, what happens with our partners? What happens with benefits? There's going to be a conversation about transgender people, since obviously that was not included in repeal. And it's just, to me, it's so exciting to meet these folks, because it goes back to what we were saying when we talked about Frank. I mean, these are individuals who are willing to die for this country, but who couldn't be honest about who they were. And now they can walk in the office and say, here's a picture of my girlfriend or wife, and I'm going to put it on my desk.
Right.
You know, it's a completely different cultural, huge change for them. And so it's going to be very emotional. I think it's going to be really, really moving. And it's also very exciting, because many of the people who risked their careers and have risked their lives are going to be there. You know, Jonathan Hopkins, Katie Miller, you know, folks who came out on Rachel Maddow's show with our help. Josh Seyfried, who went by the pseudonym J.D. Smith for months and months and months. And,
right.
You know, it was like, I felt like it was like espionage, you know, really trying to make sure that no one found out who he really was, because he really would have been in a lot of trouble. And he's now completely out. His book comes out tomorrow. He was on Terry Gross's show today, you know, on NPR. So it's going to be really, I can't even imagine how exciting it's going to be for them, just feeling as excited as I am to just be a small part of it.
Well, I want you to be very present, though. I don't want to hear any stories about how people were, oh, where's Kathy? Oh, Rena's at the nickel slots again. So it's important that you be present, Kathy, for these things.
Yeah, that, well, you know, I was all excited when they told me that the convention was going to be in, said, New York, New York. I thought, oh, great, I only have to take the bus into the city.
Right.
Unfortunately, it was New York, New York, the hotel in Las Vegas. But that's okay. I'm happy to
I didn't even know there was such a thing.
I think it's going to be great. We have a not a ton of media. We're being, you know, careful, because we don't want to inundate people. That's not what this is about. This is about these folks getting together and really figuring out what's next now that we've had this incredible victory, but understanding that it is, you know, it's the beginning.
Yeah.
Cultural change in the military and the beginning of other things we need to do.
Well, I know you have to jet, but I want you to give a quick shout out to a story that a lot of people are covering, and I know is on your Facebook page, about lesbians being more at risk for cancer, because I don't think that we do enough with some of these health stories, and the health stories are pretty important.
No, I appreciate that. You know, we do a lot more work around healthcare, and I think healthcare issues are becoming, as related to the LGBT community, are becoming much more prominent, partially thanks to not just the work of LGBT activists who for decades have been toiling in the trenches trying to get us to pay attention to things beyond HIV. It's also because we now have an administration that's paying attention, and we have a Director of Health and Human Services. And so, you know, the big thing, and Liz Margulies talks about it in this piece, and I urge everyone listening to go take a look at this op-ed on advocate.com, talks about how we're not collecting the kind of data we need to really even understand what the scope of the problem is.
Right.
And then the other thing that we really need to do is increase cultural competency. Go to the doctor, fill out a form, and when it asks questions, you know, I will never forget the first time I went to the doctor and it said, are you sexually active, yes or no? And underneath it said, with men, women, or both. Now, that seems like a tiny thing.
Yeah.
But the incredible sense of relief I had when I saw that made me feel so much more comfortable going in to see a new doctor.
Absolutely.
Because that person realizes I exist, basically.
Yeah.
And that's still a huge problem. And Liz's group, the National LGBT Cancer Network, does a ton of education around cultural competency for all kinds of healthcare providers. So I appreciate you bringing it up, because it's a really important issue.
All right. Well, we will let you go get started to Occupy Vegas. You know, you're one of my favorite people to have on this show, Kathy. You give us all the news.
Anytime.
You give us all the news. And if people have not seen the pivotal, and pivotal doesn't even begin to describe it, the pivotal appearance, you can see it on YouTube, of Kathy Renna on the Sally Jesse Raphael Show. You're missing out.
Would you found that so embarrassing? Although I did give them hell. There's much more fun recent stuff. Just, hey, friend me on Facebook. There you go.
Friend her on Facebook. I'm sorry, Kathy, but that I love that Sally Jesse Raphael, because it's just, they don't make shows like that anymore where you can say two lines and then everybody starts clapping, because you really only say about four sentences in 3 or 4 minutes because it's all the clapping. So it's a great clip.
They cut it kind of, like, that's not the whole show either, but I'll tell you a little secret, because, you know, the show's been canceled. It's long history. We basically packed the audience. I mean, we
had
like half of the congregation at CBSD. We had a bunch of B-flaggers. They asked us for help getting audience members, you know.
And you helped. And you helped. I loved it. So people should check that out and perhaps some other current work that Kathy's doing. Kathy, keep doing what you're doing. You are bringing awareness where we sorely need it.
Thanks very much. You too.
Safe travels. Bye.
We're back.
I love you to do
Wait,
that.
I was.
And now, more. This show is so gay.
God, I need that every single week. We are back. That was a fun. Wasn't that a fun song? That's one of my favorite songs.
I love it more than life itself.
I know that you do. All right. So tell everyone who I don't know. You start, Jen. Where did you guys go the other day? when you left Brattleboro?
We went to New York City.
Now, why? Because you went to go see a gay Broadway show.
That's redundant.
Wow. It's bad enough, Stephen, that you are you're creating a podcast that's competing in the same markets as mine. And by that, I mean the internet. But that was unbelievable. So you went to New York City with any purpose?
To be a part of the movement.
Okay.
I don't call it a... the word is now escaping me because I don't call it that. Protest, yes. Yeah. I call it a movement.
I will, but walk me through, because there is a whole, as I was saying before, there's a whole gay angle to the Boston one,
looking
to the Boston one right now.
Looking forward to hearing that.
There's actually a gay angle to all of these Occupy, and apparently there's going to be an Occupy Brattleboro. I read that on iBrattleboro.
Saturday,
yeah. Anyway, so walk me through, whose idea was it to go?
Oh, it was definitely Steve's idea.
It was Steve's idea. And how did this play out?
Well, we were already down in Connecticut. The short insert of story is that one of my dearest friends from high school died at the Trade Center. And every year we get together and we have the Mark Jarda Memorial Jog, which, because we're all too old to actually run. and it's just a get together and families. It's 10 years going now. And it's really one of my favorite things of the year. So since we were already there, I thought, and my sister lives right outside of New Haven. I said, let's just hit a train in New Haven. Let's go see what's happening on Wall Street and in what's now being called Liberty Square. I can't not be there. I mean, I've been dreaming of stuff like this, and I'm hoping that I'm not over assessing this, but I think we've got a lovely and kind and compassionate revolution on our hands.
Okay. So and we'll get back to that, because I know that you had a caller this morning off the air who disagreed with some of that. It was me. So you took this Liberty, what is it called? Liberty?
They're calling it Liberty Square. It's Zuccardi Park.
Like Liberty Mutual? Or
no, I think it's just Freedom or some sort of something.
I thought it was sponsored by Liberty Mutual.
Yeah,
so
nice.
That was fun. So you took the subway down? Is that how you arrived there?
Took the train to Grand Central and took the subway down to Canal and walked the rest of the way.
Okay. So at some point you turned a corner and saw a lot of people?
Yep.
And
yes.
I love that she nods
New York,
for radio. You could almost hear the nodding, but you can't.
So a lot of people,
So you saw a ton of people, and then you immersed yourself in the masses. And what was that experience like?
I'm still trying to figure out what that experience was.
Two days ago.
Because we were there two days ago. Yeah, brought up a lot of feelings for me, but I'm a very emotional being.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, it was great.
It was great.
It was
for you,
a really powerful, very powerful.
Yeah, I have to say, I got swept up in a lot. Being there is different than seeing it on YouTube. There were a lot of things that were moving. I am not a crowd kind of guy. Don't care for the violations of personal space.
Right.
But I got past that because it was a very kind and allowing and aware crowd, which is not usually what you get in Lower Manhattan. It was a nice bunch of people in a small cube of space. And I have to say, in addition to it being very moving to see a well-organized, basically driven by young people, but there was a whole cross-section of people.
Very educated young people.
Yeah. And really smart, but smart about systems. And the other piece was, I have to say, that being there on what I'm hoping to never hear called Columbus Day again, I sometimes call Genocide Day. People would like it to be called Indigenous Peoples Day. But people from the First Nation were there. People from the Lakota and places out west were there to talk about Columbus and talk about the aftermath of what we're now living, which is, that was an early version of corporate greed. And here we are these 500 years later. And that, I think, was probably the most moving moment of the day.
And you've been to other, now I hesitate to call it protests.
Mm.
You've been to other protests.
Oh, certainly.
Like, how does it compare to, I don't know, what have you been, like, potato famine protests? I don't know which other ones. God, that's just keeps getting more and more fun.
It felt very different. And as I was saying on the radio this morning and the last couple of days, is that it's not a thinking thing. It's a feeling thing. This seems to emanate from a feeling place that doesn't know boundaries and doesn't know party lines and doesn't know affiliation and doesn't know any of the details that that divide us off from one another. The feeling is that something's fundamentally not right, both in this country and in the world at large. In modern civilization, there's something fundamentally not right when this many people are virtually and actually enslaved, and in one form or another being forced to suffer so others can be opulently wealthy. And I think that feeling there was both a condition of protest and anger, as well as a condition of, we can do better than this. There is a better way to be in this world that we were for most of our time here, and then we got diverted somewhere along the way. Let's get back to that. And I just feel like that was why it seemed different. That's why it still seems different and is growing around the country. And I think this comes from a place where you don't have to be smart or not. It's just a feeling that we all have. It's like, wait a second, this isn't how it's supposed to go.
Right. Well, and speaking of the enslavement, so there is a growing call now for LGBT organizations to get involved with these various Occupy movements. And I know Boston, it's some weird stuff going on in Boston, right?
Yeah,
now.
I was watching it on the live stream the other night.
So people should check that out. But Mass Equality, which is one of the biggest LGBT organizations in Massachusetts, they came out today and said, we need to be doing more to support these movements. I'm going to read a little from their press statement. The LGBT community is disproportionately represented among those who are victims of the nation's ongoing economic crisis. We are the un and underemployed. We are the un and underinsured. We are the homeless and the underhoused. And we are disproportionately impacted by government-sanctioned discrimination and denial of resources and protections. If any group understands the plight of the 99% given voice by Occupy Boston, it's the Commonwealth's LGBT 6.5%. And here are some stats that they put out there. 25 to 40% of our homeless unaccompanied youth are LGBT. Of those, 73% are homeless and unaccompanied because their families rejected them. Ooh. Among all LGBT youth in Massachusetts, youth are four times more likely than their heterosexual peers to attempt suicide, and that likelihood doubles when their families reject them. 15% of transgender respondents in Massachusetts to a national survey reported a household income of less than $10,000 compared to just 3% of the general population, and 90% reported experiencing harassment and discrimination in employment, 20% reported that they lost a job due to anti-transgender bias, and 14% reported being refused medical care because of their gender identity. Attempted suicide is a public health crisis, 22 times the rate of the general population. Couple more stats that they put out there. Federal law expressly denies legally married same-sex couples access to spousal social security and other health, tax, immigration, and retirement-related protections for families. And the mere fact of living as an LGBT person in Massachusetts correlates to higher stress and poorer health outcomes. So Mass Equality is saying, gay people,
go for it.
If there's ever a cause. But there has been some pushback to that, to say, this is not our issue right now. We have to get equality first before we can fight against the corporations that are perpetuating inequality.
I couldn't disagree more.
Go for it. I disagree more.
I think that what's being discussed, because it's not well defined and clear, it's eclipsing all other issues, I think. And frankly, I think that if people want equality, and I was thinking about what you were saying in context of the statistics I know about Native Americans and how they are so in a multiplication factor of 10 more suffering than most of us in many ways. And I think that now is more reason than ever for all to come together there. I guess I kind of feel like if you want equality to come quicker, or if you want wellness to come quicker, we need to go to the root of the issue. I read a quotation today. I can't remember who it's from, but, you know, it's one thing to attack the branches of evil. Oh, it was Thoreau. But, you know, many people can attack the branches of evil. But if it takes one person to go to the root, and the point being that what's at the essence of this is the monetary system that results in, you know, foodborne illness, results in all forms of illness, and results in all sorts of suffering that comes secondary to poverty and other forms of monetary enslavement. And equality comes to an empowered and bolstered and thriving community of any kind, whether Native American or LGBT, that says we now feel stronger as individuals and therefore are consequently stronger as a group, and therefore we'll take our full equality now. Thank you.
Let me say this, though. Let me be the devil advocate for a second. If I were to go to New York and I were to, I'd called into Steve's show this morning to say that I have a student at the college who was saying that he wants to withdraw to go do this full time, to be in New York full time, to be a part of the movement, and how I struggled with that a bit, because this is a student, you know, there's just kind of some basic facts, and I want students to be inspired, but there are the basic facts where you would then lose $44,000 that you've already paid for tuition, and there's some correlation there to what you're going to do, but I'm not really comfortable making it, and also don't want to lose my job, so I shouldn't say more than that. But if I were to go down to New York right now, and I were to be standing next to one of my NYU brethren, my fellow NYU student, I'm not a student anymore, but an NYU sophomore, wearing particularly nice clothes with shoes that perhaps cost more than what I'm wearing, and I would kind of be annoyed. I don't think that I would feel the solidarity. I think that I would go back to what mass equality, and I'm not saying that this is what mass equality is trying to achieve, but I would go back to some of these statements and say, who are you, you know, I don't know. I think that's so ridiculous to say, like, well, everyone should be saying, protesting together. But at the same time, I think that I want some of these things for me fixed first before I want them fixed for other people.
But that's like saying, like, you know, when I lived in Northampton and you know, almost all of my friends, the majority of my friends were gay women. And I helped out with all sorts of gay driven things. No. And like, was I not welcome because I didn't walk in those same shoes?
I'm not saying that. And let's be clear. I mean, when I talk to you, I do pretend that I am talking to a lesbian, but, aside from that, I'm hoping that that's not the case for you, but that's a couple show and we don't do that here. Steve's podcast. No, I am more saying that there are parts of these stories that are kind of an affront to me, because to fix it for everyone still will not fix some of the things that I just read.
That's where I struggle with some of this.
But
we're looking at a paradigm shift here. I mean, within this paradigm, this paradigm creates suffering in so many ways, and ways that we couldn't describe in 10 lifetimes. It's a system that destroys and creates suffering more than it alleviates it. And I think if we can look to shift the paradigm to one of compassion, then that automatically follows. And again, these are large notions that take a long time to get to, but it also is sort of, I think, the essential way we were prior to this madness that became modern civilization. Post-Columbian, we getting back to, like, in the city, in the Liberty Square, that little city there, that little thing they're creating there is all about compassion and awareness and respect. And even though it's metaphoric in many ways, and I understand, I can be as cynical as the next guy, but I'm telling you, I think we're born into this world to be that. It's a survival and coping skill that humans have built in, and we've trained it out of ourselves, and we need to get back to it. And when that's the operating system, then equality comes to all, because we presume it rather than have to fight for it.
Yeah, I just feel like with some of the paradigm shifts I've seen, it still doesn't change the face of inequality for LGBT Americans. And that perhaps, again, and as we get to election time, and I guess I'm already in New Hampshire, the signs are starting to crop up everywhere, which is just kind of like,
vote for Mitt's hair.
Yes. Vote for recycling. No, don't, because we're going to just make all of these signs. But as we get into this political season, this is when a lot of the LGBT organizations are looking at Obama and saying, so what has he done for us? And where's the paradigm shift? And so many things have changed in this country, but not necessarily for LGBT people, which is not also true, because gays can serve openly in the military and we can go to New York and get married. And I don't know. It's not cynicism on my part. I just feel like my back is up and thinking, all right, so this might change, but is the social justice element of all of this running through it?
Well, let me suggest this.
That's what makes me nervous.
Let me suggest this. And again, well, I'll just say this. Part of what's happening is that it's an organic movement. The plane is being built as they're flying it.
Yeah.
And in the process of that, even online, there are wiki documents being created for people to say, what do you all think are the most essential ingredients to what we're doing here? And that's a place where everybody does have a say and a pull and something to push in. The other thing I would say, though, is I'd caution you to retrain your eye to find the kernels of things that you think are healthy and good in this, because we need to be amplifying those. I understand the concerns, and I understand that it falls short of purity for certain. And God knows, believe me, there is stuff there I would rather not have seen. But I'm trying to be as open to all the healthy, good things there as possible, so as to blow lightly on those little sparks and have them grow into a nice, large flame. And I think that's where my energy is going, even though I'm aware of the stuff that is maybe not optimal.
I don't not support what's going on. It's more for me, I am one of those people that likes to see where things are going to go. And I get that that's not what this is right now. The end goal is not there.
It's a feeling. Right. Yeah.
That freaks me out. I hate it.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Control freak. Totally.
Yeah. For people that need to know, this is can be very uncomfortable.
It's very uncomfortable.
For people that don't need to know, like, I love it. I love that it is unfolding and we don't really know.
You love chaos theory.
I don't know if I love chaos theory, but just I love that kindness.
Yeah, I love kindness theory.
I love I love that this is happening.
I really think there's something there.
But, you know.
Now, what about the Occupy Brattleboro?
But we look for it. We look for that.
Yeah.
And that's what
we hope. I feel
like
you guys went in with the eye of, I think that if I went right now, I have such blinders on that I probably wouldn't be able to see what I need to see.
Go.
I'm not going to, but... Stop pressing.
Everybody
but no,
I know
is
will
good.
Go. Maybe I will go next week. I'm doing some New York City time next week. And, good. And,
yeah, it's not, I have to say, it's, you know, it's not the cleanest place in the world.
Right.
But at the same time, it's a cross section of everybody you can think of in every form of every demographic of tall, short, plaid, pink, black, white, gay, straight. Everything, every person you can think of is there.
Yeah. Right.
You know,
it was
as
amazing.
Opposed to what's being
and
portrayed.
And I grew up in New York City seeing. Lots of different people. It was beautiful to have so many different people.
Yeah.
And all represented. And it's funny that you say it wasn't that clean. The whole time we were there, I kept seeing people gathering trash and taking care of things. And it was this great little, they had built this little community. They had their kitchen, they had their sections, you know, a library. They, you know, it's just, it.
Yeah, I retract that statement because actually when you think about it, it was very well organized that way with people walking around constantly picking up trash. The dirty part was a lot of piles of rained upon sleeping bags and stuff like that. It was like,
Well, and again, gay people are disproportionately trash collectors in Rutland.
Nice.
That's what it always comes back to.
Gotta get a Rutland in there.
I know. I've never been. So I don't know.
It was built around a big rut, which is really weird.
Was it really?
Yeah, sure. It was a big rut. It's a meteor thing.
Did they have any walls? Because they should listen to Wall Builders Live. I can't honestly wait to get home and go listen to that. There were a couple other stories. I mean, there were definitely a couple other stories to put out there, and most of them are political. I don't know. There's all this going on with the Republicans, and actually, we haven't even talked on this show just about the booing of the gay soldier. But I don't know. I don't know. That story, you don't even know what to do with it at this point. It's not like there's shock and awe, and people were expecting something else to happen. So it just kind of becomes this talking point. And of course, it shouldn't have happened. But I don't know that.
Yeah, it's hard to get your head around.
Yeah. And then keep your eye, folks, on the House Armed Services Committee, because Representative Buck McKeon,
get out.
And I assume that's not his baptismal name, he chairs the House Armed Services Committee. He said this week that he would rather see Congress fail to pass a defense spending bill than pass a bill that would enable military chaplains to perform weddings for same-sex couples. The House-passed version of the bill contains an outright ban on the practice, though the Pentagon recently said chaplains could, if they so choose, officiate at weddings that are legal under state and local laws. So that's what it's all about now. Don't ask, don't tell is all about, will the chaplains do the ceremonies? I mean, it's just
what
so ridiculous.
What a big pile of madness.
It's so, so ridiculous. Yeah. And then I didn't even realize that it is, last weekend was the 2011 Values Voter Summit, which is actually soundbite central.
I would imagine.
For LGBT issues. It's super fun there in D.C. They shockingly had harsh words for LGBT advocates with Representative Steve King, who is from Iowa, calling LGBT advocates, quote, the most unhappy people I ever met that call themselves gay.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Look what he was doing there with that word. Brian Fisher of the American Family Association, because they're accredited, said the next president should treat homosexuality as, quote, a threat to public health. You get to just say stuff like this, by the way, if you go to the Values Voter Summit.
Wow.
Republican presidential candidates address the conference. Okay. So I'm making it sound like this was some fringe conference. This is not a fringe conference. If you are a Republican candidate, you must go address this conference. This is part of your base. Republican presidential candidates addressed the conference and reiterated their opposition to marriage equality, though Mitt Romney and his hair specifically distanced himself from Fisher's rhetoric. He said it's, quote, poisonous language that doesn't advance our cause. Our cause being rolling back gay marriage in places. But as we were talking about with Kathy Renna, that's just not the way we package it. Again, I don't feel that the candidates were upset at the sentiments.
No,
it was just the packaging.
Yeah,
that you shouldn't be saying outright that it's a threat to public health. You just need to think it really loudly with your hair,
right.
Or perhaps, and I'm not singling out any candidate, perhaps have a husband who,
right?
Yeah, we've been over that.
He's trying to convert everyone that he runs into. Well, so to, and do you know, we're already coming to the end of our time here.
Oh my God.
This is how quickly these shows go. What do you do? What should people who have either been to Liberty Square or are reading about it, what should they do with this? Again, I need next steps.
Well, that's what's so nice. Is...
I'm realizing that even as I said it.
That's so funny.
I need next steps.
They're not
honestly,
there, though.
You could see Jeff.
What I've been saying on my show is basically whatever it is you think you should do, do it. And even if it's easy lifting, I got in a little bit of wordplay this morning about, I was saying prayer, which you can do right in your own seat from where you are, or actually physically go there or send stuff down there. Howard Prusak from High Meadows Farm up in Westminster sent 200 pounds of organic produce from Westminster, to there, just because that's what he could do. He's a farmer, you know, and so this is what people do. Whatever you've got, offer it, because this is a time
it's
to act in some form.
Raise awareness about it on the gay radio show.
Fantastic.
There you go.
I can do
you're
now.
Doing your part, you know, and we went there as observers. I intended to interview all sorts of people. I'm like, screw that. And I just wound up like filming and talking and moving about it and being in it. And I've come back so energized. I haven't felt this positive about the future of the species in a really long time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Did I say this morning that what they said on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me?
What?
That there's a medic, that there's like a chief medic down there in Liberty Square, and that the number one injury, they said it seriously, it wasn't even one of their jokes, but the number one injury that people have been treated for there in Liberty Square are blisters from the bongo.
I could see that. There's a lot of the drumming going on.
That's funny. Funny. All right. Well, as always, folks should drop us an email. And people, I told you both this, people wrote in more Steve and Jen.
Oh, that's nice.
We got that email from like dozens. We got it from two people and they were really.
Thanks, Mom.
Oh, and the other one was Jen. But so folks should drop us an email at thisshowsogay@aol.com. People still use AOL. That's what someone wrote.
Apparently.
Yes. That's not very Liberty
Post
Square.
Is being used by AOL.
That's true. Hey. That's true. And you can get gay views apparently there on the Huffington Post.
So it would seem.
Stroll on over to thisshowsogay.com and listen to past shows. And this is ridiculous that you two don't have a bio up there yet, because you've co-hosted more than people who do have bios up there.
This is kind of a straight takeover of your show, Mister. I just
love
want
it.
To let you know.
Love it. Okay. I'm all for it. I'm not at all for it. And go to the Facebook. I assume that you two have liked This Show Is So Gay on Facebook.
Many times, but I'll only let you do it once.
Yes, it's radio, but if you could see Jen's face right now, you know
that
she's
I'm not
got
the Facebooker.
She's one click away.
She's a passive Facebooker.
Does not mean that I don't love This Show
one
Is So Gay.
One click away from
go
liking
beyond
us.
The like. I love it.
Yeah. Gosh, that would be worth something to me if you like the show on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Give me a break.
I could have done it already.
All right. Get it? I was saying Churchill because I was making fun of it. It was an age comment.
That
was funny. I can't wait for the memorial shuffle when you guys change it from the jog to the shuffle. Is that coming up soon?
It's going to be that.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, we got to get out of here. Folks, go out there and raise some awareness. Go down to Liberty Square if you can. Go over to Boston. In Brattleboro, there's Occupy Brattleboro on Saturday.
Go to OccupyTogether.org, and you can find out in every city around the country where you can go and best apply yourself.
Learn about the amazing, amazing leaders that we lost this week. Read up on Matthew Shepard and his life. Just a fascinating life. And I will say, without question, a highlight of my life was having on the 100th show of This Show Is So Gay, was having Judy Shepard, Matthew Shepard's mom, call into the show. And that was a hugely defining moment. And I will tell you, this show this week, and you guys don't even know this, our third year anniversary.
Oh my God.
Isn't that pretty cool?
We would have brought a cake.
I know. We should have had streamers, rainbow streamers. So it's our third anniversary, and we will celebrate that by, I'm running a rerun next week because I'm going away. But after that, we're totally back. All right. So get out there, folks. Raise awareness. Do whatever it is you do. Use your voice. That's how you make change in this world, by figuring out what your voice is and how you can best use it. And above all else, and I'm assuming you guys remember how to do this, why be gay when you can be
so gay?
On the 4th of November, a warm southern breeze pushed the temperature up above 60 degrees. And the leaves, red and gold, drifted down from the trees and saw history as they fell. For we left home our overcoats, left home our gloves, headed down to the park for some peace, hope, and love. while the news helicopters all circled above. It was the night we won the war. By the tens of the thousands, we poured through the gates, stood elbow to elbow to wait out the wait, put our kids on our shoulders and kept them up late. And what a story they'd have to tell. And we cheered as the Jumbotron tracked our success from Virginia to Michigan, east to the west. And when Ohio came in, our hearts burst in our chests on the night we won the war. And oh, California, you know, we were all of us counting on you. And oh, we were all pulling for you. And then you came through, reliably blue. Shout that rose to the skies, and we all hugged the strangers that stood at our sides. And even Chicago cops wiped the tears from their eyes on the night we won the war. And all the stars in the sky, they stood still just to hear. And the whole world was listening as well for the words that came from the new president's mouth. Said, let this be the start of an end to the fight between the us and the them, and the north and the south. Between the north and the south, and the black and the white, the American flag was a beautiful sight on the night.